Welcome to You've Gotta Taste This, the podcast where food people tell you about recipes that you've simply got to taste. I'm your host, Adam Roberts, and I've been writing about food for almost 20 years. I love to cook, and even more, I love to talk about cooking. So let's get started. My guest today is Aaron Hutcherson, a writer and recipe developer for The Washington Post. Here's the message that he sent me.
Hey Adam, it's Aaron Hutcherson, and you've got to taste this. It's my take on my mother's baked chicken thighs with butter and onions. I think you're going to love it.
So this week we're tasting baked chicken thighs with all kinds of spices, butter, and onions. And you can get the recipe on amateurgourmet.com. But for right now, here's my conversation with Aaron Hutcherson. All right. Well, Aaron, thank you so much for coming on. You've got to taste this. How's your day going?
It's going pretty well. Tested some recipes, did a little bit of writing, you know, the life of a food writer and recipe developer.
Sounds nice. Yeah. You were just saying that you're based out of DC. So is it freezing cold there or is it kind of mild?
Today it's about 40 degrees. Yesterday it was almost 60. So it was pretty nice, but yeah. I hear there's a cold front coming.
Okay. I mean, I kind of missed the freezing cold because I got to cook like such hearty food. I mean, when you're in LA, it's like the same day over and over again. And you kind of, you know, like I just made a salad for lunch, which is kind of depressing.
How boring. It's nice weather all the time.
It is. It's too much of a good thing is the thing. Well, I think I'll jump right into it. So I messaged you that, you know, I needed you to send me a recipe that you were passionate about. And I loved the recipe you sent me because it was a personal recipe. It was one you grew up with. Do you want to tell us about it before I tell you about my experience making it?
Sure. So the recipe is baked chicken thighs with butter and onions. It's a version, sort of my updated recipe developer take on something that my mother used to prepare for us growing up. And it's very simple and straightforward. You just make a spice mix to season the chicken thighs, put it into a baking dish with butter and onions, as the recipe title implies, and then bake it until they're cooked through and they're delicious and juicy.
Yes. So I had friends over last night and I made this, and with your suggestion, I think you said serve it with rice. And, you know, I was like, is this going to be like too simple? Like, and it just seemed like very straightforward, but it was so good and so satisfying. And that spice mix, it's like all things I had in my cabinet. It was like, you know, cumin and paprika. And I'm trying to think what else. I think it called for dry thyme and I didn't have that. So I used oregano. I hope you're not mad.
I'll let it slide. Let it slide.
Black pepper. And I'm trying to think what else was in it.
I think salt and garlic powder.
Garlic powder. Now, okay. There were two flavors in there that are so my mother too, which are garlic powder and paprika. Like my mom barely cooked when I was growing up, but when she did, it would be chicken breasts with like garlic powder and paprika. I remember that color, like the red, like flecks all over. But there was something about this dish, because I think chicken thighs are like such a powerhouse ingredient that people don't, you know, most people go out and buy like boneless, skinless chicken breasts because they feel like it's the healthy thing to do. But there's so much more flavor in a chicken thigh. And your recipe has the skin on, which at the end you can broil and get crispy. So you kind of get this like crispy skin that has butter that creates kind of a sauce that like has onions and then all those spices and the salt. And so my friend who was over and my husband, like we were like all like grabbing the chicken and like gnawing like savages. And then like all that juice going into the rice. So it was fantastic. I loved it. But I'm curious, like in terms of you, so what was the difference between the recipe you grew up with and then the one you tweaked for the Washington Post?
So the recipe I grew up with, my mother is a good cook, but she's very limited in what she
I hope she's not listening.
Repertoire.
Okay.
Hi, Mom.
And
she knows what she knows and she tends to stick to those things. But growing up, she would just bake everything at like 350 degrees. Mm-hmm. And so with chicken, it's like hard to pick up any sort of browning at that temperature. So with this recipe, I increased it. And then also my growing up, at least, I mean, now she's slightly converted. I've taught her the new light, but there was a lot of seasoned salts and garlic salt and sort of spice blends that were
Yes.
used.
Mrs. Dash, my grandmother used to use Mrs. Dash on everything. Remember that? Okay, so she would use the spice blends on her stuff.
Yeah, whereas I like to have more control over the exact flavor profile, so just call for individual spices. And then also I use just chicken thighs, whereas like there would be sort of a whole chicken cut up that my mother would cook, which still tasted good, but with something like a chicken breast, if you bake it for too long, it's not gonna be the best thing.
Yeah, no, not at all. And that's the thing about chicken thighs is they're so forgiving. Like you can overcook them a little and they'll still be tender and moist and juicy. Well, it's so funny. So I was reading about you before we spoke, and you and I have something in common, which is that we both had like kind of conservative careers or kind of just like traditional careers and then took a sharp left turn into food. I accidentally went to law school, which is my joke. And I got really into food and then I ended up being a food writer. But you worked in finance, which I
Yeah,
had no idea.
accidentally ended up on Wall Street.
Crazy. So can you tell us a little bit about your journey from like where you grew up, how you wound up in Wall Street, and then how you pivoted into food writing?
Sure. So long story short, I'm a nerd. I
Well, it takes one
love
to know one.
numbers. I've always been very good at math and I really like math. I don't know if a lot of people say that. So just when it was time to go to college and pick a major and eventually a career, I was like, I like math, I'm good at it, so let me just focus on that. So I studied engineering and finance. And then before you knew it, I actually sort of randomly ended up getting a master's in finance. Like you sort of stumbled into law school. I was there, a friend suggested it. I was like, sure, why not? And then a few months later, there you go. And so, yeah, I was just going down this path and I just kept going and kept going and never really thought to stop to sort of think and reflect, like, do I really want to do this? Is this really what excites me? But also, in college, my only work experience was like teaching, like working as a camp counselor somewhere and trying to keep kids from hurting themselves. So I didn't really know what real work was like. But yeah, so I ended
And
up in finance.
where did you grow up?
I grew up in Chicago and then went to school in St. Louis.
In St. Louis. I mean, finance is so interesting because it's like that in terms of contrast, like the world of finance and then the world of food. I mean, even just in terms of how much money you can make, I feel like, I mean, you gave up like Wall Street for like, I mean, just based on my own experiences, like writing articles and stuff, it's like, it's pretty hard to, be like rolling in dough as a food writer, but like rolling in another kind of dough, I guess. But sorry, that was not funny. But I'm curious, like with the math, the love for math, how does that express itself in cooking?
I don't know if it does too much. I mean, of course, you have to work with measurements and fractions and all that stuff. But what I love about math is that it's very logical. You do A, you get B. If you do A again, you're going to get B. So I guess to a certain extent, that's how I try to write my recipes for the public to make them as logical and straightforward as possible, as foolproof as possible. But as you know, there's always going to be external variables that are hard to take into account.
Well, I find that savory cooking versus baking or sweet cooking, like there's such a difference. Like even last night when I made your recipe, it was like, okay, like a tablespoon of salt. And I actually did follow your instructions. Normally, like if I was doing it, I would have maybe done like 2 teaspoons of like garlic powder, just because like I like to play around. But I do find like with savory cooking, like you can add like a pinch of this and a dash of that, like if you're making a soup or something, versus mm-hmm. like baking, where it's like if you take out like half a cup of sugar, it could like destabilize the whole cake and it will collapse. So I mean, I do find from my own experience that like math oriented people tend to be more interested in baking than like savory food, especially because of the precision involved and the numbers. Mm-hmm. But it seems like you do it all.
I do a little bit of both. I love the precision, but then I also like to wing it and experiment yeah. and just throw things at the wall and see what sticks. Very much right and left brain going on at the same time. Sometimes they get into a fight with each other.
So in terms of like your call to food writing, I mean, was there like a book you read or like a writer you admired or something you encountered along the way where like, well, wait a second, I want to do what that person's doing? Or was it just sort of a gradual pull into this universe?
I think it was somewhat a gradual pull. I was one of those kids that like always loved food and being in the kitchen and cooking. Yeah. I grew up watching like Rick Bayless and Julia Child and yes. like all the PBS food cooking shows because we didn't have cable and Food Network.
Which, by the way, are the best cooking shows. I still watch PBS. I pay for it now to just watch America's Test Kitchen, Cook Country, like all that stuff. Mm-hmm. That's the best cooking stuff on TV, I think.
I know. It's really sort of unparalleled in what they cover and do. So my going into food was I wanted to be one of those people developing recipes and teaching people how to cook. But then as I got more interested in it and sort of more into the food world, I discovered more of the storytelling aspect of food. Mm-hmm. I love how food can be used as a vehicle to talk about society and culture mm-hmm. and class and sort of anything under the sun. And that's sort of where I have taken my food writing, or I try mm-hmm. to.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, there's still the like, what do I do with a bunch of parsley or the difference between stock and broth? But then it's also, speaking of garlic powder, it's like, I think it was last year at some point, I wrote an article about garlic powder and how it's a useful ingredient because not everyone feels the same way. A lot of people are like, oh, fresh garlic is always the best choice when mm-hmm. in fact it's not. And for me and a lot of other people, like garlic powder has been a staple in kitchens and cooking. And sometimes it can be traced to class and race, and sometimes it's just, I don't know, I feel like people can be snobby about food.
And yeah, for sure. I feel like there's a backlash to that now, though. I mean, did you see the movie The Menu?
I saw it and I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's tackling that very idea that, like, you know, if you're paying like $1,000 to go to a restaurant and eat like a piece of seaweed and like foam on it versus like a home cooked meal with garlic powder. I mean, it's like, you know, sometimes it's like that pretentiousness and ridiculousness can feel like it's the most sophisticated, but there's really nothing that sophisticated about it. At the end of the day, it's like food should be, you know, nourishing and comforting and all that stuff. So I'm curious, in terms of your writing about class and race and stuff, like, was there an article that you wrote that like kicked that off for you? Like, was there something that was your first foray into tackling that?
I think my first one was back 6 years ago, maybe. I was working 5 or 6 years ago. I was working at Tasting Table, and I wrote about the use of the word ethnic to describe restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in response to some other article or publication that used it, and then I just sort of did deep dive into when we use ethnic versus when we use international, or mm-hmm. And sort of the breakdown of that and the demographics, and just how that sort of plays into what we think about the perceived value of a cuisine.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, like, I can't help but think about the period that came after that, which was, obviously the pandemic, but then the Black Lives Matter movement sort of taking on, more resonance and especially in the food world. And there were a lot of shakeups in the food world around then. And I'm curious, like, did all of that, I mean, because this was a subject that you wrote about anyway, was that sort of invigorating for you in terms of the stuff you were writing? Did that make you want to write about that subject more, or was it already something that you were going to write about no matter what?
I feel like it's always been something that I'm going to write about. But it was good in a sense that more people were paying attention to that sort of writing and storytelling. Because there have been people doing the work sort of long before the movement, the quote unquote movement happened. And now it's just society at large, I guess, is actually paying attention to it a little bit more closely.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking of PBS, the Cook's Country, I mean, what I'm totally blanking on her name, but the author of Jubilee,
Toni Tipton Martin.
yes, she's now the editor of Cook's Country, so she's on that show now, and it's so cool to see her because I love her book. So yeah, there's all kinds of cool stuff that's sort of happening now. So I'm curious, like, in terms of what, so you're working right now for the Washington Post, and you're doing a regular column. So is that a lot of pressure to come up with a recipe every week, or how often do you have to come up with stuff?
So I don't do recipes every week. It's I usually have a recipe once or twice a month, in addition to sort of other articles that tend to be more geared to like home cooks and how to use ingredients, sort of along the lines of like the garlic powder piece. Last week I wrote about broth versus stock and what's the difference, and does it matter which one you use?
What is the
So,
difference?
traditionally speaking, broth included meat in addition to the vegetables and spices, whereas stock was primarily bones, simmered with vegetables and spices. But the another sort of more modern definition is that broth has been seasoned with salt. So it's like you can drink it as is in a soup or like bone broth or something like that, whereas stock is more used as an ingredient to make your stews and braises and things like that. But in terms of the stuff that you buy at the store and most uses, it's sort of interchangeable.
Yeah, I just read an article. Noah Galutin, who is the first guest on this new podcast, he just wrote an article for Eater where he tried to do like a deep dive into like what is in box stock, because box stock is one of those rare things that like the main ingredient on the ingredient list is chicken stock, which is like that doesn't really make sense. And it was a really good article because like he tried to like speak to people at Campbell's and speak to people at Swanson and just try to go deeper and deeper and deeper, but it was like they weren't giving up anything, it's and he tried to like look at the government regulations and like it's like a certain amount of liquid per amount of meat product is what the government definition of broth is. So it's all that said, like at this point, like I either use water or sometimes I'll make it myself, but I actually just went to the trouble of making a whole gigantic vat of chicken stock with a whole chicken, and I put them in glass jars, and I put the glass jars in my freezer, thinking that that would be okay. But I overfilled them. They would be okay, but they all exploded, and I wasted a lot of time and money and a chicken's life.
Oh no, that's
Yeah,
so sad.
this. I want to circle back with you because I like the idea of like building off this recipe as a way to like learn more about you. So, I mean, we kind of skipped over like Chicago and your mother's cooking, but in terms of growing up in Chicago, I mean, was the food you ate informed by where you lived? Like, was it, I mean, were you eating food like cold weather food or food that was unique to Chicago?
A little bit. I mean, we were very much into the like meat plus a starch plus a vegetable as our
Right.
meals. There's lots of meatloaf and pot roasts and lasagnas and spaghetti and stuff like that, and baked chicken.
Right. And how big was your family? Was it just you, or did you have siblings?
I have an older brother and then both my parents.
Okay, got it. So it was table for four and just cozy, like sort of comfort foods, would you say?
Lot of comfort food, a lot of soul food. Every once in a while, we would branch out. At some point along the way, my mother started making stir fry, where she'd like buy the jarred stir fry sauce
Nice.
and get some like bell peppers and onions and chicken and cook it and serve it with rice. So that was sort of a new recipe, a new cuisine for
Yeah.
her to cook.
Well, in your article that you sent me about the chicken thighs, you talk about being in the kitchen with your mom and then like learning how to cook yourself and then taking over some of the responsibilities and her sort of teasing you a little bit. But can you talk a little bit about how old you were and like how you first started getting into it?
I've been in the kitchen for as long as I can remember.
Really?
Yeah, it's like I don't remember a beginning. It just sort of always has been. But yeah, I was very much a mama's boy and just wanted to be in the kitchen with her because she was the primary one who made the food. She was a stay-at-home mom for most of my childhood. And so, I don't know, just by osmosis, I sort of picked up what she was doing, and then I'd want to help and do it myself. And there was sort of, I guess, some of it was me wanting to, I don't know if it's gain independence and like trying to figure out how to do it myself as a kid, or just curiosity is like, what's going on? How does this work? And me needing to figure it out, but that just sort of took hold of me and I ran with it to where I am today, I suppose.
Yeah, and so like but you took over some of the meeting, like you put like different spices on it, and she would say like, what's in here? So she was encouraging of you like cooking, would you
She was
say?
cautiously encouraging of me in the beginning, where I would just sort of grab stuff that like the spices that she never touched. I was like, what is this? I want to see how
Got
it
it.
works. Like, yeah. Like in the chicken, I have cumin as one of the spices. Like, I don't think she ever cooked with cumin and would
Got
know what exactly what it tastes like and could be able to pick it out. But
So this recipe is like a little combination of you and your mother, and like it's sort of like a tribute to her, but also your own independent spin. That's cool. I was going to ask you mentioned soul food, and like I'm naive, so I don't like how would you define soul food? Like I know that there's a book out now called Soul Food, and but like what is the definition of soul food, would you say?
I characterize it as food that has been traditionally cooked by African Americans in this country. So it's sort of very much intertwined and entangled with Southern cuisine. But I would say that sort of, yeah, there's a large Venn diagram where there's lots of overlap, but I think soul food gives an ownership to Black people about the over the cuisine. So yeah.
You said there's a Venn diagram. I'm just curious, like, what are some of the dishes that are not Southern that are considered soul food? And not to put you on the spot, but I am just curious about it. But if there's not a quick answer, that's totally fine. We can move on. But
Yeah, I don't know if there's a quick answer, and I'd probably have to think a little bit more about it.
Or maybe a better question is like, what are some of the soul food dishes you remember growing up with and loving?
Well, like fried chicken and mac and cheese and smothered pork chops and like collard greens.
That sounds so good right
And
now. I'm like so
I'd
hungry. That sounds delicious.
and I'd even like consider spaghetti, which to be part of soul food, because I feel like there's different types of spaghetti, but like There is a writer, and I'm drawing a blank on who did this, but someone who wrote about black people, like black people's spaghetti and how it differs from other types. It's a thing that, for me, I think of soul food as like the stuff that I grew up eating, that my family cooked and that we always had around at holidays and
Yeah.
throughout the years and even weeknight meals.
What's in the spaghetti? I gotta know.
I mean, nothing life shattering, I don't think, but it's, your standard ground beef and spices and tomatoes. My mom would sometimes put a little bit of barbecue sauce in it,
Oh, see, okay,
for a little bit of
that's cool.
smokiness.
Yeah.
Other people do their own things, but we would eat spaghetti as an entree, but also as a side to go with like fried chicken or fish,
Nice.
which I think is weird to some people. It's like fried chicken and spaghetti, but yes,
I
it
think the barbecue
that's.
sauce ties it together. That makes a lot of sense.
I mean, not a lot of like, it doesn't taste like barbecue sauce, but
Oh,
you
okay.
would sometimes add like a squirt, like a couple tablespoons, just to
Right.
give some smokiness, a little bit of extra sweetness, and a hint of spice.
So am I wrong in saying that you also went to culinary school? Is that
I
right?
did.
So what was that like? I mean, going from, was that after Wall Street?
It was at the same time. I
Oh, at
went
the
to
same
culinary
time.
school
Okay. Where'd you
part
go?
time. I went to the French Culinary Institute,
I knew
which,
it. Yeah, that used to be
yeah.
right there because I used to, I had friends that worked there and I spoke at like one of the food writing classes once. It's sad that it's not there anymore. But did you have a good experience going there?
I learned a lot, and I was talking with someone recently who was like, "Is culinary school worth it?" And for
Yeah.
me, I think it was, because I'm the type of person who learns best with structure. Like, I need deadlines and someone to sort of help guide me and sort of force me to do the things that I need to do. And plus, like, sure, you could learn a lot of the stuff on your own by reading books and looking at YouTube videos and
Right.
whatnot, but yeah, for me, I learned best in a classroom setting. And so, yeah, I definitely got a lot out of culinary school.
I'm curious, like as somebody who like did exactly that, like I, mostly watch PBS cooking shows and read cookbooks, and I've never been to culinary school. Like, so like what were the things that changed the way that you cook having been through culinary school? I mean, is it like how you hold a knife, like how you sear a piece of meat? I mean, were there certain techniques and things that shook up the way you do things?
Yes, but like the biggest takeaway from me is salt.
Okay.
And just how transformational it can be in a dish. I think beforehand I was very cautious and timid. I mean, as people should be to a certain extent, like, many Americans eat and consume way too much sodium.
Right.
But on the flip side of it, using salt properly can really enhance the taste and flavor of a dish to a level that I hadn't realized before. Because I remember, I think it was maybe just like a soup or a pot of lentils or something, and we just like add more and add more. I'd be like, "Oh, add a pinch," and then chefs would just like add almost a
Dump it in.
handful. I
Yeah.
was like, "Oh, that's how this is supposed to taste."
Right.
And so it just sort of opened up my mind to what food can taste like.
It's funny because I did a little quick Instagram story last night of the chicken when I was doing it, and I had the little slices of butter on each thigh, and somebody wrote me and they're like, "You cook with a lot of butter. I mean, I'd be scared to use that much." And I'm like, "Do you know what they do in restaurants?" And like, it was like an eighth of a tablespoon on each thigh. I mean, that's nothing, but it's like people get so timid about butter and salt and all that stuff that it's like when you go out and the food is so good, it's like that's why it's so good, because they're seasoning it properly and they're using it the right amount of fat and all that stuff. So I know that the French Culinary Institute had like a restaurant attached to it. Did you do that thing where you had to work in the restaurant to graduate? What was that like?
It was the last sort of level of the program, where you rotate through each of the stations, like appetizer, fish, pastry, entree. And I mean, it was cool in the sense that I was serving food to the public and I had no clue who they were. But it was definitely very different. I later went and worked in a non-school restaurant environment, where in school there was like four of us at each station rotating. So there was never really too much for us to focus on at one time versus working in the actual restaurant kitchen where there's a million things going on at once.
Can you tell me what restaurant, or is it a secret?
No, I worked at Northern Spy. It doesn't exist anymore, but it was a restaurant in the East Village in
Yeah,
Manhattan.
that sounds very familiar. So you've done a lot. Like you've worked on Wall Street, you worked in restaurants, now you're writing a column. But was there ever a moment where you thought you were going to be a chef at a restaurant? Like that was the path that you were going to be on?
Yes and no. So I ended up working at the restaurant for about a year. And it was the hardest I've ever worked in my life, but I also really enjoyed it. But this was also a decade ago, when I was making something along the lines of like $10 an hour. And so it was just unsustainable.
That'll buy you like a eighth of a bottle of olive oil at like, some fancy store in New York. So, I actually we skipped over the Wall Street part. So, like, were you a trader? Like, were you on the floor, like one of those people on the TV? No.
No. I worked in wealth management, so it was much calmer, much slower paced.
So when you were in that world, I mean, I feels like the people that would work in that world would be so different than food people. I mean, I feel like I mean, I'm just imagining it based on like the Wolf of Wall Street, but like I have no idea. But like, did you like that world too, or were you anxious to get away from it?
I think for the most part, I look at it with a little bit of like rose-tinted glasses, like, oh, it's because I know this is not the experience everywhere, and probably even people within the same company, but for the most part, the people that I worked with were actually pretty nice, and good people, and like some of them I still keep in touch with. But yeah, I mean, I also remember the sort of other side of the coin. Like at the time, there reached a point when I was like, I need to get out of here, because just because I knew it wasn't what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Now, in terms of like, now, part of the reason I went to law school is because I had a Jewish mother whose dreams for me were to be a doctor or a lawyer, and that was it. And so I was pre-med in college, and that didn't stick. And then I went to law school. But I'm curious, like with your mom being mostly encouraging of you cooking growing up, like was part of the path into finance like a parent pleasing thing, or was it something that you independently had wanted to do? I guess I'm asking, like, is the food career something that like you was a re something that your family was encouraging as a career, or was it something you had to arrive at on your own?
Well, I think at the time, like outside of seeing the the folks on PBS, I didn't really think of food as a real career. Like growing up mostly in the 90s. And so it was never really something that crossed my mind of like, oh, I can do this for a living or I want to do this for a living. I was like, oh, maybe. I feel like I even back then I was like, oh, I'll be one of those people that when they retire goes to Italy and opens up a restaurant or something like
You'll be like the White Lotus or something.
that. Exactly. So yeah, I never really the thought of like going to culinary school and making food my career never really crossed my mind sort of growing up. It was always like, oh, this is something that I enjoy, and then it'll be a fun hobby that I can maybe explore later at some point. But it was sort of when I started working in finance and I was like, oh, this is what having a job is like.
Yeah, not fun.
I have to do this every day for the next 40, 50 years. Oh, I need to find something that I like a little bit better. It's like, oh, I like food, so let's think about that.
So when you
But
graduated, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I know, I was like, yeah, my parents were definitely a little suspicious
Oh yeah, your parents, right. Yeah.
of like, are you sure you want to leave this good job to go cook? They were never discouraging per se, but they always had their questions and they were like, are you sure? Just to, and I was like, yep, that's what I want to do. But I've always been the person who, like, I think everything out maybe too much sometimes. So it's always well planned out. Like, I know the risks and rewards. And if I'm doing something, it's because I've thought through all the various possibilities and I've arrived at this is the best decision. So I think they sort of picked that up and was like, okay, like,
Great.
go ahead.
Well, that's
Let's
so
see what
nice.
happens.
Yeah, that's great there that they support what you're doing. I mean, I have to ask, I mean, it feels like it's the most taboo subject and we never talk about it, but it is the money subject because I mean, I wouldn't bring this up except for the fact that you're coming from the world of wealth management into the world of food writing. So I mean, I looked at your Instagram before we talked and like I saw like you're no longer doing branded content. Is that what it said? That's like I mean, you know what I'm talking about? Like it said, like, no, not currently taking brand. So, I mean, have you found a way to monetize your food career in a way that actually allows you to use your financial skills to like manage your money? And like, because I mean, it's sort of what sounds like, well, that's what you were talking about like thinking ahead, making this leap. I mean, were you able to make it work because you understand how to deal with money and how to make it work?
Well, now, like working at the Washington Post, I have a real salary with benefits and everything. But yeah, leading everything before this, like I saved a bunch of money when I started to go to culinary school and then did everything I could to sort of manage my expenses when I was only making$10 an hour or worse, working for free at unpaid internships. So yeah, I mean, I've always been just very good at managing my money and my expenses, and I was able to survive when I was making almost nothing, and now thankfully I'm making more than almost nothing. So things have worked out, but I also recognize that that's not the case for everyone. Like, I'm very privileged in that there aren't a lot of places where you can go work full time writing about food and like get
A
paid
hundred
a real
percent, yeah.
salary.
It's I remember like I think Amanda Kloot once wrote for like Eater like it is possible to make money as a food writer and I was like what like it was his article because I mean I go up and down like you know I've had moments where like you know like I would sell a book or something like okay great like no I mean when I first sold my first book I thought I was rich I was like oh I'm rich like that's it like I can retire now and I blew through that money and then taxes came up and like it was like oh you owe like half of that back and I was like oh, I didn't realize that. I was going to say though, so in terms of like your actual cooking and your frugality or your sensitivity to like not spending too much money, like do you feel like it informs the dishes you make? And because it is sort of your subject, like you mentioned class, and you know, like when you go food shopping, for example, are you looking for like the discount, like what's on sale? I mean, is that sort of, does that inform like how you cook, or is it not so much the leading factor?
It's not, well, somewhat. It's like, I feel like all my answers are like, yes, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
But the yes part of that is, for a while now, I've been sharing pantry friendly recipes that are all built around either frozen or shelf stable products.
Okay.
And the thought process behind that is, like, with the pandemic, a lot of people were like, oh, I need to cook for my pantry because I can't go out shopping as much as I used to. But a lot of people have had to use pantry ingredients before the pandemic started, and like even today in like food insecure areas. And so I thought it was important to create delicious recipes that more people had access to the ingredients and could cook with. So yeah, I definitely do try to take that into account. I think that's not all the recipes that I do, but that's something that I think about and am conscious of when I'm looking at sort of my slate of dishes that I want to develop.
It's funny because I make a lot of pasta, and people on my Instagram are always like, how do you eat so much pasta? But it's actually for that very reason, just because I have tons of dried pasta in my pantry. And if I'm feeling lazy, I just open up the pantry, pull out a thing of pasta, and then either make a tomato sauce, or like if I have a vegetable in the refrigerator, like do something with that. But I'm curious, like, what are your other like back pocket pantry dishes that you'll make if you're not going to go to the store? I mean, all I can think of is like carbs, but is there anything else you can make from the pantry?
I mean, there's a lot of carbs. So there's pasta in various forms. One of my favorites is like, you can use regular like Italian pasta, or if you happen to have some sort of Asian noodles, then cook those and make a quick like spicy peanut sauce with peanut butter and either sambal or sriracha or whatever hot sauce you have, some vinegar and water. And then if you have some fresh vegetables, great. Or even if you have canned or frozen vegetables, add that in, and it's delicious. Fried rice is always great to make. Let's see.
Those all sound good. Yeah. Again, I'm very hungry.
I have one of my favorite recipes, pantry recipes, is a black bean and pumpkin stew. It's like canned pumpkin puree, canned black beans, some orzo, some like whole cumin and coriander, maybe an onion, and like that's pretty much it.
Pumpkin and black beans go well together. I actually bought a squash not too long ago, and I like was trying to turn it into a soup, but it was kind of didn't feel like dinner because it was just like it felt like a Thanksgiving like appetizer. It was just butternut squash soup. So I actually dumped in a can of black beans and then added a bunch of like random spices and stuff. And it was a great combination because you have the sweetness of the soup or the squash, and then like the black beans give it like a little more earthiness or balance it out. So I'm curious in terms of the writing part of this. So we spoke about culinary school, and we spoke about growing up in your mom's kitchen, but where did the interest in writing come from? Were you always interested in it?
I actually used to avoid writing at all costs.
Okay, like you're a math guy. Yeah.
Yeah. In school, I sort of despised it. Yeah, writing papers was never my favorite assignment. But I guess it's just because I never really wrote about anything that interested me too much. But I think I've always had some level of talent for it, and I've just been able to nurture it over the years, and had some amazing people helped me nurture it
Okay.
over the years as well.
Yeah.
Some lovely editors out there. Thank you all for everyone
Yeah, the
who's ever helped my
unsung
copy.
heroes of all of us food writers are the people who like
Yeah.
prevent us from sounding like idiots. So what was the first piece that you sold as a food writer?
Oh.
Well, I guess you had your food blog, right? So you started the
Yeah, I
food
had
blog.
my food blog. And yeah, I started that in 2009.
Okay.
So, which feels like forever ago.
Mine was 2004, so I must be much older than you. Yeah, I'm ancient. I'm almost 20-year anniversary of my food blog, which is crazy.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So you started that 2009.
Started that,
Yeah.
and then out of culinary school, I interned at a food magazine called Food Arts, which no longer exists
Yeah.
as food media publications sometimes do. And so that was like my first real chance to write anything that wasn't just for myself and my five friends that read my blog.
Right. So, I mean, in terms of like the becoming like the writer that you are today, like tackling the subjects that you do, was there like an article that you wrote that like was the premier version of that, or like the first time you did that? Did I ask you this already? I might have already asked you this.
We talked a little bit about with like the use of the word ethnic in restaurants,
All
but
right.
I don't know. I think it's just been sort of a slow and steady evolution ever since then. Because around that same time, I think I also wrote something about the Juicy Lucy burger, which I don't know if you're familiar with, but
No, what's that?
it's a cheeseburger, but the cheese is inside the patty.
Okay.
And it's popular in Minneapolis. As I went there for a friend's wedding and had it, I was like, oh, this is great. And then I ended up writing about the experience, and I don't remember what I wrote or what I said, but I just remember writing about it. And got to have fun. So like sometimes it's fun and lighthearted, other times it's sort of more serious, in-depth looks at race and culture, and sometimes it's everything in between. So
And are you one of the people that don't read the comments, or do you look at do you get a lot of responses to the stuff that you write, and do you engage with them?
I usually will look at the comments and get a sense of where they're going.
Okay.
Like after you read the first couple, you're like, oh, is this going to be a good thing to read or a bad thing to read?
Right. Yeah, I get it. I've been there. I've gotten so much better about it. I used to take them so personally, and now it's like, you piece of crap. This is the dumbest thing. And it's like, eh, fine. You're some sad person, right? I don't know. I don't take it seriously anymore, just because people are so crazy on the internet. I was going to ask you. So you grew up in Chicago, then you lived in New York, and now you're in DC. So which city do you like the most, and which one has the food that you like the most?
Oh man. I mean, I sort of guess I'm from Chicago and like live there for most of my life, but I don't know, all of that was before I turned 18, so
Okay.
I don't know how much I really know Chicago, at least as much as I know New York, where I spent 13 years. And New York really sort of shaped me into the adult that I am today.
Yeah, same.
So I love New York. I was sad to leave.
Yeah.
I still visit a couple times a year.
It's so funny because
So.
when I did a cookbook, I went to DC to do like an event, and I did like a Q&A, and somebody was like it was like, Adam, like, DC is like really on the food map now, and we're getting so much acclaim for our restaurants. Like, can you tell us like your favorite DC restaurants? And I was like, I have no idea. Like, I never spent any time there. So I was like, I don't know. I felt really bad. But like, have you taken, I mean, it is true that DC does have amazing food, right? Or now it does. Like, it's doing.
Yeah. DC has some good food. I'm still not extremely knowledgeable about the DC food scene. Just because, especially now, I don't really cover restaurants a whole lot. But I do definitely have like a handful of places that I enjoy and frequent, and I'm happy to tell you about.
Okay, good. I'll be prepared for the next time. But what were the places in New York that you loved the most, or like the food that you missed the most from New York?
So I lived in Astoria, and I loved all the Greek food, and like just being able to stop at a food truck and get a souvlaki pita or whatever and call it a day. DC also isn't as much into breakfast sandwiches as New York is.
You're right. The classic like egg sandwich, cheese and sausage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to. Yeah, those were lifesavers. Sometimes it was a treat. Sometimes it was a salve to help cure whatever I did the night before.
Yeah, you need those. Those are important. That's what diners are so great for in New York, too. You can go to a diner and just get like a big plate of like hash browns or something and like cure your hangover. Well, Aaron, this flew by. We're almost done. I feel like we covered a lot of ground. So usually I start by talking about the thing you told me to taste. That's a you've got to taste this thing. But now I'm going to ask you, what was the last you've got to taste this dish or thing that you experienced that was the, like the most memorable thing you've tasted recently?
Oh, man. The most memorable thing
It could be something you cooked. It could be something that you had at someone's house, something that you ate out on the road. I mean, it could be anything. It could even be what you had for breakfast or lunch today.
Well, today the recipe that I tested, I'm working on an air fryer Old Bay chicken wing recipe.
Wow, yum. Okay.
It's pretty good, if I do say so myself.
That sounds
very simple, but very good.
Old Bay on a chicken wing is such a good idea. I never thought of that. Okay, so are you an air fryer user? I don't have one, but I see them all the time now on people's Instagrams and stuff. So are you somebody that advocates the ownership of an air fryer?
I'm very new to air fryer ownership. I just got it in December, so it's only been a couple months, but and I used to be very much anti-air fryer. It's like, what's the point? It's just a convection oven.
Yeah.
But now I might be changing my tune a little bit.
What made you change your tune? I'm curious. Like, what do you like about it?
Especially as like a person that lives alone, it's the perfect size for cooking meals for one or two. It's even better with leftovers. Like, I used to heat up leftovers a lot in the oven, but this just does it quicker and like crisp. Or sort of re-crisp things better than the oven does. I mean, I'm not going to use it for everything, obviously. Well, not obviously, but
But
it's good I see it perks.
All right. So this was not an infomercial for an air fryer. You will not be getting branded content money for this.
No.
But this was so much fun talking to you. So thanks so much for doing the podcast. And next time I'm on the East Coast, we'll have to meet in real life.
Yeah, let me know.
All right. Well, have a great rest of your day. Thanks so much, Aaron.
All right. You too.
Bye. Well, that's it for this week's episode. If you'd like the recipe for Aaron Hutcherson's baked chicken thighs with onions and butter, head over to amateurgourmet.com and check out my newsletter where I send it out every Monday and Thursday on Substack. And of course, you can follow me and all of my cooking adventures on social media at amateurgourmet. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. All right. We'll see you back here next week. Have a good one. Okay, thanks for listening to this week's episode of You've Gotta Taste This. If you want the recipe that I made that Felicity sent me for the poppy seed bread, I'm going to include it in my newsletter, which is amateurgourmet.substack.com, and it's free and it comes every Monday. And if you want to see it, all my cooking and everything on Instagram, I'm amateurgourmet on there, as well as Twitter and TikTok. All right, I'll see you back here next week, and let me know if you made this. Tag me in your posts. Bye.